Welcome to the IME Community Podcast, where self-love is your superpower to achieve your weight and life goals and make your mark in the world. Your host is Dr. Carla, activist MD. If you're a teen who's looking to revolutionize your health and can't wait to follow your dreams, welcome to the IME Community.
This is Dr. Carla. I'm so excited today because I have one of my TikTok friends. I feel like I know her. Geriatric millennial today on the YouTube video and podcast. And she has been sharing her journey taking one of the GLP-1 medications. So that's how I started following her. She has a really funny channel too. So she talks about life and all the things. And she's also a mom. And that's why she's here today to talk about her family's journey dealing with childhood obesity and kind of how we mishandled it as pediatricians. We know we haven't gotten it right. And so we want to do better. And then as we know, the FDA has approved Wegovy or semaglutide for the use as an anti-obesity medication in adolescents age 12 and up. And so we're going to talk about using that medication and then sharing her daughter's journey on TikTok. And as we know, if you're on TikTok, if you're a creator, I always say the app is like 50% amazing and 50% kind of like trash trolls. So it's always hard to decide how to show up. And anyway, welcome, Kaylee. Tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got started, how you decided to show up on TikTok and share your journey taking a GLP-1 medication.
I started gaining weight pretty rapidly in my late 20s. I was diagnosed with PCOS, insulin resistance, when I was about 18 or 19, but I never really struggled with my weight until after I had kids and a little bit later into my 20s. Once I hit 31, 32, I started gaining a little bit more rapidly. So I did all the things. I went on diets. I had a personal trainer. I restricted what I was eating and nothing really seemed to work. I would lose a couple pounds, but as soon as I stopped being super strict with whatever I was doing, I would not only gain the weight back, but then I would gain more. I started taking a GLP-1 medication, Mounjaro, last summer after trying to unsuccessfully get Wegovy and Ozempic. I saw that the makers of Mounjaro had this savings card and I was super excited about it. And I already had a little bit of a platform on TikTok. And so I thought, and a lot of my followers are women, they're middle-aged and we're all dealing with the same types of things. And so I decided just to share the fact that I found this medication. It was so new. Nobody really knew about it and that it was accessible to everybody for, at the time, it was $25 with the savings card. And from there, it just kind of grew into this bigger thing of sharing my whole journey of my weight loss, of side effects and things like that. The reason why I even had the idea of ever taking one of these medications, though, was because of my daughter. She has dealt with childhood obesity since she was a little girl. 4 or 5 years old is when we started noticing a significant weight gain year after year, about 30 pounds. And we can get into all the nitty gritty of all this later. But how I ended up kind of researching the medications for me is when we finally found her current endocrinologist, she brought up that Saxenda was approved for children 12 and up. And Natalie, my daughter at this point, was about 10 or 11 years old. I think she was like about to be 11. And I said, well, I've heard about Wegovy. Is that approved for children? And she said, it's not yet. And I don't know if I would be willing to even prescribe any of these medications until I knew that maybe someone in the family had success with it. And she said, usually because obesity is genetic, because you guys share the same genes, sometimes kids will respond better if parents have responded better. And I, as a physician with these medications being new would be a little bit more likely to prescribe them to her if there was any sort of case of familial like experience with it and success. And so I was like, bing, I'm going to try to do whatever I can as her mom to get on this medication and have it work. And that way, when she turns 12, I can go in there and be like, it worked for me. Now let's get the ball rolling.
Mm-hmm. So very focused. Mm-hmm. A focused deficit, yes. Which is how you show up on TikTok. So for those people listening, maybe you're living under a rock and you haven't heard about the GLP-1 receptor agonist, which is the class of medications we're talking about. So Saxenda is also known as liraglutide, is a daily injection, but is a GLP-1 receptor agonist and is prescribed to children, to patients, adolescents too, with usually they have insulin resistance, they have type 2 diabetes. And then Wegovy is a semaglutide and is a once weekly injectable medication. And these medications act in different areas of the body. They have really profound effects in the gut. So they delay gastric emptying, which is one of the big effects, but they also help with what's called glucose dependent release of insulin from the pancreatic islet cells. By the way, none of this is medical advice. We have no, we have no disclosures. I will never have those. Some doctors do, but I don't. And we are not representing the medications. We're not advocating for them. Always talk to your doctor. We should have clarified that in the beginning. And so they act in the gut and they help to what, you know, if you follow me, you know, I talk about insulin resistance all the time. I think that is the true epidemic that's facing teens. And the more we focus on just weight loss, calorie restriction, the old harmful BMI focused ways that we're doing things, the farther we're going to get away from addressing the real epidemic of insulin resistance. And so people really, even physicians, have such minimal understanding of what physiologically is happening. And so when we look at these medications as just weight loss medications, or they're classified as anti-obesity medications, we really miss out on the real issue. The real thing that they're treating is the root cause. And so the weight gain or the weight loss is just a symptom of treating it. So they act in the gut and they have really powerful effects there to, like I said, delay gastric emptying. And then they, you know, help to restore the balance of how the body's supposed to work with insulin release when we eat. And then the other thing is they have really powerful effects in the brain. So we have GLP-1 receptors in the brain. So they call it the quiet mind of Mounjaro. That's one approved for adults. And so, you know, this is really powerful for patients who have been struggling with binge eating disorder, constant cravings, and they for once are able to go throughout their day without having constant food chatter ruling the day. And if you've gone through it, I've had that issue too before I went through my own weight loss journey, but I don't take the medication, but I know what it's like to have your whole day ruled by that. So, so thank you for sharing that. So tell us a little bit more about you shared about your pediatric endocrinologist, your conversations with her as these medications were just getting approved. Tell us a little bit more about how pediatricians, we know we haven't always gotten it right when it comes to how we've addressed children and adolescents with overweight and obesity. Can you share more about your journey and struggles?
Yeah, honestly, it's been frustrating, eye-opening. And I think it's been really frustrating. So when she was about 4 or 5 is when we noticed that she was, every time she would hit a growth spurt, it seemed like she would grow up and she would grow out. That's what we would always explain it as. And every time we would bring up, you know, hey, she gained 30 pounds since last year, and every annual physical, it would be another 30 pounds. And so we started bringing it up to her pediatrician, privately without her in the room, and they would just strictly focus on nutrition. Now, a 5-year-old isn't driving themselves to McDonald's to get cheeseburgers. Like, we are the ones feeding our children. We are the ones buying the groceries. We know what's in the house. And at the time, my husband and I, this was like 2016-ish, we were on a very strict diet. My husband lost 100 pounds. I had lost about 40 pounds. And we were eating super strict, and the kids were eating what we were eating. So we were eating plain Greek yogurt. We were eating like natural foods, a ton of salmon, and she was still gaining weight and she was still insatiable. And those were things that we kept saying. She is insatiable. She will not stop eating. And the doctors were just like, well, you know, maybe she needs to see a psychologist. Maybe she needs to see a nutritionist. It was never endocrinology until because I have experience with, I have hypothyroidism. I've worked in the medical field for a long time, not as a clinician, but I just understand it. And so I started advocating and I called endocrinologists to get her into appointments. I called GI doctors to get her into appointments. We called neurologists to get her into an appointment. And we did the whole kit and caboodle. They thought maybe she had a pituitary tumor. They thought maybe she had Cushing's or Prader-Willi. They did, cortisol tests and everything. They tried to rule everything out. And at the end of the day, they're like, well, I mean, her growth chart looks good. And maybe you just got to stop feeding her, you know, so much food. And I'm like, really? But she eats the same thing as her sister that's 1 year younger than her. And her sister isn't gaining 30 pounds a year. So very frustrating. And I kept feeling like I was hitting a brick wall. And I don't know why year after year I would bring it up expecting different results. So I stopped bringing it up to her pediatrician altogether. I start calling endocrinologists in the area, and we would take them to different endocrinologists to see if somebody had a different opinion. And I knew there was probably some sort of like study or something. And that's what I was really looking for. I worked in like a research hospital for so long in a teaching hospital where I was like, there's gotta be opportunities to like get her into something. And that's, I took her to a hospital about an hour away. And they said, maybe when she's like 14, she can qualify for bariatric surgery. And I worked in bariatric surgery and I was like, hell no, I'm not doing that to my child. There's gotta be something better for her, for us, for anybody who's struggling. I just can't believe that this is so untapped. We finally found her recent endocrinologist who was a godsend, who validated all of our concerns, who said this isn't normal, who treated her for hypothyroidism. She had high TSH levels. I think they were like 15, and everyone refused to touch her. And she looked at family history. She looked at the patient as a whole. She said, Mom, you have PCOS insulin resistance. Dad has insulin resistance. Dad's pre-diabetic. It's a combination of you both. Let's treat her as such. And so when she was 8, we started her on metformin. She started her on Synthroid, and she was pretty honest, her endocrinologist. She said, look, this might not do anything as far as weight loss. And we weren't looking for that. We were looking to treat the root cause, as you said. And really all we wanted was to see no gain. We were like, if she stays this weight for the next 5 years, she'll probably even out. And she didn't. She continued to gain until she finally went through puberty. Once she hit 2 years after her like period, is when she stopped gaining weight, and she has stayed at the same weight for the last about year and a half, 2 years. She did go through early puberty, which they said was caused because of her obesity. She has had bone age scans since she was 7, showing that she was 6-7 years older than she is. She has all the telltale signs of insulin resistance. She has a dark ring around the neck. She has a hump in her back. She has like a round face. She has facial hair. She has acne. She has every single thing that women in their 20s and 30s complain about and get treated for. And people were just overlooking her. So with her doctor, we just came up with a plan, you know, a short-term plan, put her on metformin and increase it as needed. Of course, increase her activity. Of course, monitor what she's eating. Those are a given. And I think people really get it wrong when they think we're turning to medications and we're just letting them, you know, do whatever the hell they want in their bedroom and just like eat whatever they want. It's a whole lifestyle that needs to be looked at, included with this intervention. So when she was 11, which is when we had the conversation about Saxenda, we were really excited about the idea of Saxenda. And when I heard Wegovy was approved for 12 and up, her 12th birthday, I called and I said, let's do this. I want her on Wegovy. I've had success with it. I think it could really be beneficial. And she was on board, and here we are.
Wow. Kudos to you and self-love superpower. Because, yeah. Man, what an amazing advocate as a mom that you are. It breaks my heart to hear this story, but it's a common story, unfortunately. So a few key things are the insatiable hunger and appetite. And so when a child has early onset severe obesity or a weight gain that's out of the norm, and obviously then, and they have hyperphagia, they have insatiable appetite and hunger, then you go to look for all the things like the genetic predisposition or all the things that they ruled out, like Cushing's, the pituitary tumor. So my first thing always, and I've been doing this work for years, there's only a handful of us. So that's one of the major problems. So pediatric obesity is extremely complex. Pediatrics is such a complex medical field. People don't understand that or give it enough credit, but it makes sense that it is. And pediatric obesity is very complex. And so we have to have pediatricians who can step up and learn more and listen and believe the parents and not just plug it into their weight bias or focus only on the weight and the BMI. So that has really done us disservice to say what we need to do is treat it with weight loss and then calorie restriction. And that's always harmful. So there were some real telltale signs that I can tell you, like, and I know a lot of my pediatric colleagues would have referred her very early on to a pediatric endocrinologist in our area, and they would have done genetic testing right away. So that's just letting you know, FYI, that there are some really good physicians out there. But I'm really sad that you were, and kudos to you for advocating, frustrating, hitting a wall, stopped even bringing it up. And that is like medical gaslighting. You know, the harms of that, the harms of weight stigma and bias are actually, my daughter and I did a TikTok study because I had a viral post about medical gaslighting. This was during COVID, due to weight stigma and bias is always harmful. We had almost 1,000 comments on that post sharing patient experiences and stories. And I'm like, I will never get that experience in a clinic where I can have all these. And so we noticed the trends. So we literally mined the comments and delays in diagnoses. And most people suffered from like all of these things together too, a combination delay in diagnoses, the gaslighting. So weight, blame, and shame on the patient. And so when it's a child, what you're saying is it just goes to the parents. Mm-hmm. And that's very sad. I'm sorry that that happened. Let's talk a little bit more about managing expectations too. That is the other thing that you brought up. So you said, you know, our goal was to have her stop gaining weight. It's like people think, you know, if the goal is weight loss, but you have a patient, you have a child who's gaining 30 pounds a year. It's like, look for the causes, look for the etiologies, look for the contributing factors. We can't just automatically go to the diagnosis of exclusion of weight, blame, and shame and say it's all nutrition, it's all blaming on the parents, because it's just not going to work. And then also targeting the comorbidities. So the things like insulin resistance, metabolic syndrome, fatty liver disease, prediabetes, hypertension, obstructive sleep apnea. So it's like a staged approach. And I've trained doctors on this. And I think that weight bias, it just really gets in the way of their pursuing knowledge. So I hope this message gets to all pediatricians and that we all step up and do a better job. Tell us a little bit more about how she's doing on the medication, getting the prescription. I know I have a metabolic telehealth clinic for children and adolescents. We've talked about it. It's licensed in 10 states, not where you are. Otherwise, it would have been so fun to see you. So I hope people will check it out, drcarlamd.com. But I know how hard it is, and it's very individually like family insurance plan based, which kind of makes me sick, whether you can get the medication at all. But I have a lot of teens and parents who I coach and work with from, because I can work with them from anywhere, and I help them try to navigate getting a prescription, and just getting a prescription can be hard. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit more about that process.
I'm lucky in the fact that we have insurance that covers it. I'm also pretty knowledgeable in understanding how insurance works and how to check your formulary and that it changes throughout the year. So the fact that I've already been on this medication, my husband's been on this medication, gave us a leg up. We knew what our insurance plan covered, and it covered Wegovy with no problem. Her doctor prescribed it, and within 12, she needed a prior authorization, and I was a little worried about it. And within 12 hours, it was approved, and it was right at the beginning of the shortage. There's a shortage right now in the lower doses, and so we were worried we wouldn't be able to get it, but we picked it up with no problems a couple days later. She's doing great on it. She was a little nervous because it's an injection, but I let her watch my husband take his, and she's totally fine, and she's super excited. Like, she's had some doctors just say some real frank things to her at a young age. And
what did they say?
Straight up asking, what are you eating? Putting the blame on her. We went to a GI doctor once, and he said, like, I need you to stop eating so much, essentially. You know, she was 7 years old. The members have said things to her. And so she's not dumb. But she's a confident kid, and it never really got to her. But I think now she doesn't have this doom and gloom, but, you know, you go into middle school and people expect different from their friends, and they expect kids to be the same. And she went into middle school super confident, and then she left her first year of middle school like really not. And medication has given her that excitement to. Then you talked about medical gaslighting or like delay of care. I'm 100% certain that the delay in care, not that she could have had an option for a GLP medication earlier, but I'm certain that options or maybe, I just think if we would have dealt with this differently, other things wouldn't have happened. I think, you know, you don't address the root cause. You have kids who don't fit in. They can't play sports with their friends. They can't fit in the clothes. They get depression. They get anxiety. They get nervous to go to school. And then all those things manifest. And my biggest worry, again, isn't that I have an obese child. My biggest worry isn't the fact that she, the size of her pants. My biggest worry is that she's going to go to school and get bullied, and something worse is going to happen. And because kids are cruel, parents are cruel.
Yeah, parents are terrible too. Mm-hmm.
And it's just biggest worry, and that is what kept me up at night, and that is like why I'm sharing with people, because I was so desperately seeking like to find a mom on anywhere, on Facebook, on Google, at MySpace, I don't care. I was looking for somebody to say, this is what I went through, I found a solution, and it gets better, and there are doctors who will listen to you. And I just didn't have that at all, and I felt so helpless.
Mm-hmm. Like, and you're on an island just by yourself with your daughter.
Truly. And how do you put a kid on a diet? How do you put a kid on a diet without setting them up for an eating disorder, without worrying in 20 years, are they going to get on the internet and say, my mom was an almond mom and she wouldn't let me eat X, Y, and Z. Like, I never want to inflict any of that on my child. I want her to have a happy childhood. I don't ever want her to feel like anything she does is bad, any food she touches is bad, because you know what? You look at a skinny kid who eats chicken nuggets and they're fine. You look at a fat kid who eats chicken nuggets and they're a glutton and they're disgusting. And it's just, it's wrong.
It is.
It's wrong.
And again, so hard as a parent to watch your kid go through that. And then parents always blame themselves. It's like, mm-hmm. Oh, it's our genetics. And then what I find is, since I coach a lot of parents, is the guilt and the shame, because our society is a shaming for parents and on everything, that keeps us from being able to move forward and address it as an actual health issue. So your daughter had a whole host of diagnoses that contributed to it, that caused it, contributed to it. And I agree with you about, if it would have been handled differently, it may have been at a different course. And so that makes me sad. One thing I think is, like, it's the word that I think of is hope. You just feel some hope. So for one thing that people we know on TikTok don't always understand is that, and they say, oh, you're taking the cheater's way out, taking the medication.
Yep.
It's like, you just have to do these habits. It's like, they don't understand any of the physiology, any of the science behind it. It's all nerdy science, but yep. Understand that in order to create health behavior change, this is like a lot of coaching science, motivational science, health behavior change, we can't do it from a shaming, perfectionistic, grind it out place. So that evokes, like, when the doctor says, I don't want you to eat so much as a seven-year-old. I mean, that is malpractice. That is abuse. Mm-hmm. And that is compliance. That is the expectation that I, as a physician, have power and authority over you, and you are to arise to my occasion. And your BMI is a reflection of me as a physician. And so because I can't take that I have lack of knowledge, I have lack of competence on this issue, and I'm lazy and I haven't done anything, any learning, pushing myself or listening or challenging the status quo, what am I going to do? I'm going to judge and shame you, a patient, a child, and the parent. So that's disgusting. But first of all, these medications have hope. So what you can do is it gets you out of the physiologic things you're going through, the cravings in our ultra processed food society. It's, and especially for teens and children, yep, it's marketed. Those are really powerful neuromarketing tactics. Addiction scientists work on it. It works really well. So unfortunately, you know, that's not going to go away. So what these medications do is allow you to work on the health behavior changes, or, I mean, it sounds like your daughter was already doing them, or to actually get results from all the great things she's doing. Mm-hmm. We want our kids to, you know, be challenged, to push themselves. But one of the things that I, when I ask teens, we work on what's your health, why, what do you want?
Yeah.
Always, it's, they don't use the word fit in. They use, I want to be comfortable. I want to be comfortable in my body. I want to shop in the same areas of the department store that my friends do. And they want it to be a non-issue. And so inevitably, right, it's like, I have 90% of my life that's amazing. I'm an amazing leader at my school. They're perfectionistic, getting all the great grades, or maybe not. Maybe they're struggling with that and using food to cope. But it's inevitable that they say that this is what's holding them back. And so they're wanting to seek comfort. So for me, it's a little bit of a dance of like, do we want to seek comfort in a system that has created the discomfort? Or do we want to like now start living our bold, magical life and focus on the 90% and, oh, this is going to come along, but the medication is going to help.
Yep.
Tell me how you approached it with your daughter. It sounds like, I mean, you touched on this a little bit as far as like the first conversations, because that's what parents reach out to me about. It's like, how do I approach it without destroying the confidence? I know you're
yep.
Situation.
Yeah, we are. We said I would never talk about her weight until she brought her weight up to me. I would never be able to do it. She's aware of her size. I don't need to make her aware of it. And I knew there would eventually come a day where she would come to me and say something. I don't like my body. I'm bigger than my friends. I want to lose weight. How do you lose weight? And throughout her first year of middle school is when she started making comments like that. I was also fresh on my own journey of taking a GLP-1 medication and seeing how it worked and things like that. And my daughter had no clue. Neither of my kids knew that I was taking a GLP-1 medication. They had no clue I lost 65 pounds. You know, you live in a house with your kids. They don't care. So at the end of sixth grade, I don't remember the exact details, but I made a comment after she had complained. And I said, there are medications that you can take that will treat insulin resistance. And she knows that's what we talk about. We focus on like the biology of it. Like you have insulin resistance. They suspect she has PCOS. She hasn't like formally been diagnosed with it because she's only had her period for like 2 years. When they put her on metformin when she was like 7 or 8, they were like, we are pretty positive that's what it's getting to. And so we talk a lot about that and how I have it and how it relates to me and how I've struggled. And my daughter really likes, sometimes when she gets like down, she likes to relate herself to others who have overcome whatever it is. So we have talked a lot about that. And when she started talking to me about her body and how she wanted to lose weight, I said, there are medications like metformin, but it's an injection and I've actually been taking it. And these are all the great things that it's done for me. And I listed anything that I could that was outside of weight. I said, my joints don't hurt anymore. My back doesn't hurt. I don't have as bad anxiety as I used to have. And I just listed everything that I had. I said, and I've also lost 65 pounds. A side effect of taking these medications is you do, a lot of people do lose weight. Sometimes it's harder for people, but people do lose weight on these medications. We can talk to your endocrinologist about taking this, but I want you to know that like weight loss is a side effect and I don't want you to feel like uncomfortable with that. And of course she was excited. She said, yes, I do. Oh my gosh. And then she started asking me questions like, you've been taking it? What do you mean? And I introduced her to my TikTok and I showed her, you know, some videos. And again, she didn't even realize in front of her daily that I lost all that weight. And she got really excited about it. And so then it started becoming a little bit more of a conversation about weight and weight loss and like fitting in and things like that. And so that's when we brought it up to her doctor. It was probably like a month before her 12th birthday. And it was very natural. And again, I never wanted to bring it up to her. And let me say, I've not done things perfectly. When she was 8 years old and we were searching for answers, I did put her on a diet. And I like, I had that. She luckily is pretty funny about it. She's like, remember when you sent me to school with like keto fat snacks? And I'm like, oh my God. Like,
you do so have embarrassing. A sense of humor. You do have to. With parenting. Especially as they become teens, believe me.
Yeah. I mean, it was mortifying. But again, when you're desperate, and here's another thing. You were talking about physicians. Some people, and I'm not bashing doctors. I've worked with doctors forever. My stepfather's a doctor. Like I have great respect. But a lot of people take the physician's word as gold, and people sometimes are very ignorant to the fact that sometimes doctors cannot get it right. Or sometimes there is a second opinion that will get it right. And I should have done my due diligence when the doctor said to put her on a diet and restrict certain foods. I should have pushed back. I should have gotten a second opinion, but I was so desperate for something to work that I did that. So anyway, yeah. So now we talk about weight pretty freely. We don't weigh her. She has been on this medication for 2 months. She did step on the scale once, but we don't emphasize weight loss. I just ask her, how are you feeling? You know, just typical questions. I could see in her clothes that she's feeling better, that she's slimming out a little bit. I just never want to focus on weight because this is going to be a lifelong struggle for her. She's going to deal with this for the rest of her life.
Yeah. And that's one thing that I think people ask me about all the time. Well, are you okay with putting an adolescent on a medication that they're going to have to take for life? And I will say that that's one of the ethical things that I don't get into that too much. It's like, we're just going to, like my mom used to say, we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. It's like, yep. You know, that we're not going to get into all the ethics of it. We worked with the patient in front of us, the family, and there are many different criteria, whether it's severity, obesity, trajectory of the weight gain, the comorbidities that they've had, what else they have tried. Yeah, the family history, whether the family's taken the medications or have had bariatric surgery, their eating phenotype, even like how their cravings, you know, because there are other medications for different, you know, eating patterns, where they have binge eating disorders, but mm-hmm. You and your daughter have a really beautiful relationship. I call that relational health. And that is amazing. That's the most important thing. So parents are like, oh, I have to be this perfect role model for eating and fitness. Give me a break. Yeah. Perfect doesn't exist. And so we want to have self-compassion, have that self-love superpower for ourselves to know that we're going to make mistakes. You're acknowledging the harm that caused, you know, even with good intention, when mm-hmm. we have that kind of actions coming from feelings of guilt or shame, and you had a shaming conversation with the doctor where they said, you know, put her on a diet, restrict her, then the parents, they're going to double down with good intention and try to fix and solve and get rigid. And that's when that's when a lot of the harm is caused. If the kid brings it up, well, he said that I'm overweight and that I need to go on a diet. Is that true? And I wrote a whole healthy conversation script about this, how to manage these conversations in the car on the way home from the doctor.
Yep.
And how to do it is, well, what do you think about that? I, you know, just really advocate for your kid. Let's get some more information. I don't believe in that. My four pillars are no calorie restriction, be a soft place to land. So be a compassionate person and let them come to you with anything. And then the third is, like you're saying, you don't have to measure weight. You get to determine your own outcome measures. If it's not helpful, it's harmful, then don't do it. I don't think it's great data. And then the other thing is all habits count. So looking at your whole life. And so anyway, kudos to you. And the other thing I wanted to bring up really quickly is the thing about fitting in versus belonging. I love the Brené Brown, Dr. Brené Brown's work on that, about, you know, how we can create a community intentionally with people who recognize the humanity in us. And so then you find your people instead of like fitting in with the mean girls at middle school.
It's like,
tell parents what they need to do. We'll go through these humps. It's like,
yeah,
I bring it up. I'm taking the medication and I'll be like, just be transparent. I usually know, like, you have a great relationship with your daughter or your son. So just bring it up. Say, hey, I've been taking this. What do you think about it? Here's what it is. Here's a potential side effects. And then it'll be like, oh my gosh, what's next? Getting the prescription. And then the next thing is the getting the approval, getting the prescription. So maybe they don't know about prior authorizations. We do this in my clinic. So I do that work for my patients. But what does that entail? And how can you advocate as a parent to actually get the prescription covered?
I would say the first thing you need to do before you even talk about it with your kid and get them excited. And I'm just talking about an older kid. I'm not talking about a younger child. But if you're at the point where this is something you're considering, before even going and talking to your child about the possibility of it and getting them excited, I would get to your formulary online and see what's covered. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I see it every day. I mean, people are so excited about the potential that it's right there and then they can't cover it and they don't have $1,200 a month to take a medication. So check your formulary. I mean, it's super easy to navigate, but it's overwhelming if you don't know what you're looking for. Call your insurance company, see who your insurance prescription benefits are through, and ask them, is this medication covered? In this case, it would be Saxenda or Wegovy. And if it is there a prior authorization required? Is there a diagnosis required? Because sometimes they only cover it if you're type 2 diabetic. Then it's covered. Then next step is just getting into the doctor. But for me, before any of that, like if you are raising a child who is overweight and who you're noticing is chronically gaining weight, and there's nothing you can do when they're so little except for love them and make sure that they feel safe and make sure that, you know, nobody's making them feel silly for wanting a snack. All that work, and I made a video about this, but it's so true. All the work you put in when they're young and you're the parent taking on that worry and struggle about what's going to happen when they're older is going to pay off when it comes time for them to meet with the doctor and have those hard conversations. And when you do have the conversations about it, it's not their fault. This is a genetic thing. This is a biologic thing. You're here to fix it with them, but I don't emphasize weight. Do not emphasize the weight with the kids. They know. The kids know. People make sure they know how big they are. And they live it. They don't need their parents to tell them, but they need their parents to advocate for them and let them know there's a solution. And you're there to help work through it and find a solution for them.
Mm-hmm. Wow. It is so harmful, the level of weight bias and bullying that these kids go through. And so thanks for sharing that. That's really important, because that's what I find too, is that the parents, they'll get really excited and then the insurance will not cover it, or maybe they won't cover it for an adolescent, and then they're left like feeling defeated. And so we have to coach them down. Like, things are going to change over time. So you've been open and honest about your daughter's history and journey on social media. I know you're not sharing everything specifically on TikTok with the intention to help other parents and other children going through this. which we all appreciate, and you are making a difference and you have an impact. And so we appreciate your courage and sharing the story and hope you keep doing it as you want and as you continue to feel like it's helpful. But the other thing is, like, tell us more about like how that's been received. I know I've seen some of your videos and how you handle what I call the trash trolls on TikTok.
Well, I think if you're on TikTok and you post things that are going to get some sort of backlash, you need to have like thick skin and not care what some stranger behind a keyboard says or thinks. I definitely struggle with what I share and how much I share because I want to be protective of my child and our family. As I said earlier, I was so desperately seeking like some hope when I started like looking for resources, and what better way than to use the platform I already have to try to provide that for other parents. The majority of the comments that I get are from formerly obese children. You know, people say I was a fat kid, and that's what people say. And I would have loved to have a medication like this. It would have changed the trajectory of my life. And I do believe that if people don't say there's not weight bias in the workplace, they're wrong. If people don't say that they're turned down for opportunities for whatever it is, they're wrong. And so the majority of the comments that I get are great, encouraging other parents who are like, oh my God, I didn't even know this was an option. Where do I start? People are just blown away at the fact that medicine is starting to evolve to include kids on these weight loss medications or obesity medications. And the people who make stupid comments, it depends on the day. Sometimes they do get to me. Sometimes I'm like, am I harming my child? Am I doing the right thing? Should I just shut up and just do this quietly? And other days I clap back with some snarky video like you. Like,
yeah, we're good.
And yeah, and it is what it is. People, I find the people that have the most bias are people who suffer from obesity and are usually people who promote health, you know, like fitness instructors, and they want people to get fit and healthy in their terms, but not in the terms that actually make sense, like scientifically, for people who already do things like work out and eat well, and it still doesn't work. And I just delete comments. Like, it's my page, it's my little pocket of the internet. If I don't want to see that, I don't. But you know what? The best part is the community there. People will take care of those comments before I even see it. Oh, you know, you'll have people coming for them.
It is fun. Interesting. It kind of depends on the day, right? That's where the
you gotta take breaks.
Yeah, exactly. That's where the sense of humor comes in for sure.
Oh yeah.
Well, good for you. Okay, tell us how pediatricians can do a better job of supporting patients and parents who are struggling.
I think that you're unsure of the treatment and refer them to somebody who can. Don't pretend like you have the answers. Obviously, not every single child who is obese or who has a high BMI is suffering from a chronic metabolic disease. Obviously, sometimes there are lifestyle changes that can be made. I think having those conversations in a tactful way without a child present is huge. Every office has a portal, and the only person who has access to that portal is mom and dad. Send messages to the parents if you want to have like a gentle conversation, or if you have a conversation with the child, have a gentle conversation with them. Don't make the child feel bad. Don't make the parent feel bad, but refer them to somebody who can actually help and validate their feelings and concerns. Don't brush them off. I feel like if her pediatrician would have just said, I hear you, that does seem a little abnormal, let's see what we can do, it would have made a huge difference in my relationship as a parent and coming to that doctor for the next 18 years, instead of feeling like I have to go find another pediatrician who I can trust. And trust is huge when it comes to your physician-patient relationship. You want to be able to go in there and trust that they have your child's best interest at heart, and that you're just not some, you know, patient coming in throughout the day. And I know healthcare is extremely tough right now, and I know that in order to survive, you do have to see a high volume of patients, but just having that bedside manner of making people feel like they matter really makes a huge difference in that trusting relationship for sure.
Yeah, that's super helpful. So compassionate, trusting, and a scientific approach, because this is a health issue. So let's help address it as a health issue and not just go to weight, blame, and shame. And their American Academy of Pediatrics came out with the clinical practice guidelines, which were pretty bold in recommending, even at diagnosis, pushing for referrals for metabolic bariatric surgery or the GLP-1 receptor agonist, looking at anti-obesity medication. So they have a lot of really helpful information in there. I hope pediatricians, I've poured through them, I've done presentations on them, but there's 13 key action statements so that those can be helpful. And there's a lot on genetic syndromes, other, you know, etiologies, causes, contributing factors. So we all need to have this, you know, lifespan approach. It's a chronic disease. We need to involve the family, have a behavioral based approach, look for, you know, screening for eating disorders, social determinants of health. I mean, because we haven't even touched on that, but that's a big issue. We're looking at how Medicaid can cover these medications for kids who need it. A lot of children on Medicaid who have insulin resistance, who have these metabolic diseases. And so that's another bit of advocacy. So that's how we can advocate our next thing, Kaylee. Thank you for sharing everything. And thank you for your boldness. Thank you for your advocacy. Thanks for being such an
awesome mom.
Love it. And then how can we find you on TikTok, social media, all the things?
Yeah, I'm on TikTok and Instagram, and it's the THEE geriatric millennial.
Okay.
That's me. I'm an old millennial.
You're definitely way younger than me. So, so self-love, superpower to you. Thank you again for taking the time to share your family's journey with us, and you're making a huge difference, and we all appreciate it. So thank you for joining.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you for tuning into the IME Community Podcast, where self-love is your superpower. The content of this podcast represents the opinions of Dr. Carla Lester and is not intended as, and shall not be understood as, a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. The opinions shared reflect the host and guest and do not represent an organization or medical group. Always seek the advice of your physician or therapist if you have concerns about your health. And please, like and subscribe to the IME Community Podcast. Share IME with your friends and go to imecommunity.com to join the member community. Don't forget to follow IME on social.